Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Crimson Heart by Heather McCollum, narrated by Timothy Campbell. Chapter 1. Highlands of Scotland, August 1554. Shark Munro frowned as he scanned the surrounding shadows of the forest from his mount. His father's deep voice droned on, but Shark wasn't paying much attention. He'd heard it all before, and something tugged at the power that lay just under his skin. The terrain was familiar, Munro territory that they regularly patrolled, but the forest had grown quiet. A prickle of awareness enhanced his unnatural senses, and he smelled the damp earth. He scanned the area for broken twigs or indents in the spongy ground, but saw nothing that would indicate intruders. Heavy drops of rain, caught in the trees above, tapped sporadically down as their horses manoeuvred around the raspberry bramble and gorse. Philip and Edgar chuckled over a jest from where they rode behind Shark and his father. A quick glance showed John, another seasoned warrior with a thick, bristly beard, bringing up the rear. Something was triggering Shark's awareness, his secret magic, his curse. He shifted his gaze from moss-covered tree to the copse of thick, knee-high ferns up ahead. Danger? Or perhaps it was just the interrogation he was enduring.
"You're as tall as I know."
His father, Alec Munro, chief of the clan, rolled his shoulders, his reins loose in one hand. Actually, Shark had grown taller than his da by 2 inches. Even though he was over 80 in 10 years, the man still thought of him as a lad wet behind the ears. His da gestured to him.
"You filled out and inherited your mother's fine features. The lasses say whenever you walk past, even though you frown all the time. Fiona had to chase 2 forward lasses from outside your door the other night."
Oh, would he not let it rest? Shark flexed his shoulders and maintained his usual silence.
"Father Daughtry said that Judith Davidson was asking about you last time you visited their holden. Not that I want you tangled with those devils."
Alec paused only long enough to tug at his short beard.
"So you didn't have a wee bairn somewhere. I'm fair certain your mother would even be happy with a bastard at this point."
Shark levelled a dark look at his sire. "And I'm fair certain that any lass to find herself with my child would inform you as soon as she informed me. Maybe before." Alec snorted because he knew it was true. Shark was the last of the Munro line, since his 2 brothers were killed decades ago during the feud with the now allied McBaines. Shark needed to produce an heir.
"Your mother's concerned.
Ma wants a granddaughter she can train."
The women born in his family, linked by blood from some great healer in Denmark nearly 6 centuries ago, had a magical ability to move the smallest particles of air and moisture in the sky, or blood and flesh in the body. Dory and Ewan Brodie's 3 daughters, as well as Meg and Caden McBain's lasses, had inherited the gift. They all lived at Droom Castle, so Shark's mother was the only healer at Munro Castle. Their magic was a glowing blue light of healing. Shark was the first male to inherit magic, but his was corrupt. It appeared red instead of blue, and instead of healing, his magic killed, which was why he'd always kept it a secret from everyone, even his family.
"'Tis true she wants a grandbairn to coo at," Alec faced front. "But it isna have to be a wee lass. A strong laddie to learn how to lead this mighty clan would be just as welcome."
Shark breathed deeply of the pungent, earthy scent permeating the air, ignoring his da's mutterings. The trees stood silent, still, tall, leafy giants with gnarly roots erupting up through the green moss. The birds were too still, as if they hid, their little fluttering hearts beating frantically in anticipation. Anticipation of what? His father had stopped talking as if he too felt the tension.
"Philip!"
Alec twisted in his seat, but before he could utter another word, a body swung down from a tree. Holding tight to the end of the long rope, a man soared across the space to kick Alec Munro squarely in the chest. Shark's father flew with a grunt to land among the wet ferns.
"Battle!"
Shark yelled the battle cry as more men swooped down from trees around them. An ambush, and it was obvious that they were outnumbered. At least 4 men ran from various trees, while 3 others flew on ropes tied high in the tall oaks. Shark sent his dagger flying at the man who'd hit his da. The blade pierced the enemy's skull from the back, and he toppled onto Alec, who cursed furiously. Shark turned his horse, Jalak, with his knees as he drew out his long sword. The lethal song of it sliding from the scabbard shot warrior's instinct through Shark's muscles. His heart raced, feeding his body with a rush of blood and power. Every sense he had intensified. His magic swelled inside him, waiting to be allowed release like a hungry beast gnashing at the bars of a cage. He could hear the grunts and hisses of the enemy as they attacked. Several rose from under ferns.
"The bastard killed Arthur!"
The man's accent was local. Two men turned toward Shark and he dodged a dagger snapped from one of their fists. Shark whistled quickly for his wolf in case the beast was nearby, then swung his blade in an arc down along Jarek's side. The well-trained horse danced nimbly on the spongy soil with a simple nudge of Shark's knees. A third foe surged toward Dar as he rolled the dead man off him to stand. Did Dar even have his own sword? Shark urged Jarek out of the melee and leapt down amongst the ferns. Philip and Edgar battled men half their ages but fought with practiced strategy. John's thick arms bulged as he struggled against three attackers, and Shark ran to assist him. One turned to block Shark's strike from the back. With a quick twist and lunge, Shark felled him and hurtled himself against the other man, knocking him down. Shark yanked the wet fern out of the man's face and spit. "You're a Davidson." The nephew of the last Davidson chief glared back at him.
"'Tis time to rid the land of the chiefs of Monroe!"
And the man twisted his hand. But Shark felt the intent before the blade and grabbed the man's wrist, forcing it down to pierce the Davidson's own throat. Shark leapt to his feet and turned. Two men still battled his father several yards away, blood dripping down his sire's face from a fresh gash above his eyebrow. The sight of the red against his dar's pale features, hardened with intense pain, caught Shark's breath in his chest. Obviously trained and large, the two Davidsons lunged together in an attempt to kill the proud warrior. Fury flashed through Shark with such force he barely registered the dark grey wolf, jumping into the chaos, ripping into the Davidson who knocked Philip to the ground. Shark held his sword and ran, stomping down the ferns to dash between trees, desperate to get to his father. Another jumped before him, blocking his aid. With a growl of sheer hatred, Shark embedded his sword into the man's gut, dispatching him to hell, and turned to see his dar fall to his knees under the assault.
"Dar!"
Shark bounded forward, thorns slashing his legs. Leaving his sword and dagger behind him stuck in his enemy, Shark grabbed the arms of the two Davidsons. Shark felt their pulses race, mimicking the battle lust within himself, incensing and freeing his magic. Red washed through Shark's vision as he stared at the men ready to gut his father, ready to bring anguish to his mother and war to his clan. The unnatural power surged upward through him, released like a flood shattering through a cracked dam. The heat of Shark's magic boiled out of his hands where he gripped, his fingers digging into their arms.
"Blast!"
one yelled and stared at his limb, where Shark held tight. Shark let his fury flood into the two Davidsons, grabbing hold of their very essence and reversing to pull it back into him. The one man's cry turned to a scream, and the other joined the first. They sank to the earth, kneeling before the wide eyes of Shark's father.
"Shark!"
Dar called. But the blood and power rushing in Shark's ears blocked all but a whispered stream of curses from his sire. The men beneath his hands drooped, their faces turning ashen. Wrinkles in their leathery skin deepened, their faces shriveling like sun-dried apples. And still Shark extracted the life from them. Their surprised eyes sank into their skulls as he continued to pull every drop of moisture from their bodies. He knew the moment they died, their hearts collapsing in on themselves, the blood drying in their veins. And yet he still held on to them, giving in to the desire to take every last drop of their power, crushing them in their attempts to end all that was good in this world. Bones, brittle and weak, buckled as the men's husks crumbled to the forest floor beneath them, a pile of ashes, hair and broken bones barely contained within their collapsed clothes. As if to punctuate the horror, one complete skull rolled away from the neck opening of its tunic. It stopped before his father's foot. Empty eyes staring up at his sire's horrified, frozen face. Shark breathed deeply, his hands curling into fists, as his chest rose and fell with a surge of strength now filling him. With practiced focus, he re-erected the dam, brick by mental brick, and slowly the red haze cleared from his vision.
"Holy Christ, Shark!"
Dar gaped. The forest seemed to hold its breath. Edgar held up Philip and John stomped through the undergrowth toward them, forming a small semicircle, all eyes on the proof of Shark's damning power. At least 10 Davidsons lay unmoving in the thick greenery, the tang of blood and sweat filling the air. Shark's wolf raised its blood-soaked muzzle to the still canopy and howled, his song both victorious and mournful.
"By all that is holy," Dar began,
staring, his gaze filled with awe in something Shark had never seen in his father's face before. Fear. Shark shut his eyes against the sight. In a swift motion, he plucked his dagger easily from the Davidson on the ground and strode over to his bloodied longsword. The energy feeding his muscles pulsed uncomfortably, and he slammed his arm against a tree trunk as thick as his thigh. Crack! The tree shook, its mighty branches shivering as it toppled away from the group, shattering the stillness. Bloody hell. Shark strode to where Jarek stood, eyes wide and nostrils flared. The horse sensed the danger in him, but bravely stood his ground. Shark wouldn't touch the charger with the amplified strength of the dead men running through him, but gently picked up the reins that dangled to the leaves, leading him away. Shark could hardly suck in a full breath, with his heart pounding so hard, pulsing through his head, churning his morning breakfast in his gut. His wolf, Kyor, followed as they strode away, leaving the bodies, leaving his Dar and friends, with the truth. The truth that Shark Munro was a monster.
But where will you go?
His mother, Rachel Munro, charged after Shark on his way down the winding staircase of Munro Castle. Edinburgh, he threw out, though he wasn't set on the destination. At least it was a direction away from the Highlands. Somewhere people wouldn't look at him like he was a demon, as if he could suck their life away with a single touch. Well, he could, but he wouldn't, would he?
Edinburgh.
She kept up with two steps to his one long stride into the great hall. His mother was amazingly spry for all the grey hair in her braid.
I won't let you go, Shark. Don't go.
He pivoted and she stopped just short of him, his chin well above the top of her head. He looked down into her frantic eyes. He'd put that fear there, and the guilt gnawed at his gut. There is usually a slew of Munro's joking, squabbling, drinking in this hall. He gave her time to glance past him at the empty room.
They are training.
Aye, she was stubborn as his Dar. Shark shook his head slowly. They think I'm evil, that I will kill them like those bloody Davidsons. His mother looked like she would shake her head, but then stopped. She knew. She'd heard the whispers that had penetrated the clan like black mushrooms popping up on a rotting log after a storm. It had taken a full day for the unnatural strength of the two Davidsons to leach from his system. He'd broken the front door when he'd slammed his palm against it, and nearly crushed old Philip when he'd shoved the long table, pinning the man against the wall.
It will pass. Rachel clutched her hands, wringing them before her. Give it time. They grew up with you and know you. No, you wouldn't harm them.
His fists balled against his legs and he stared up at the vaulted ceiling. The beams and arched stonework had sheltered him, been his home. Yet since that day, Munro Castle felt distant and full of silent judgment. What if? He looked back down into his mother's pleading gaze. What if I do harm them?
You wouldn't.
Her expression firmed, and he could see the battle building in her gaze, her head snapping up in defiance.
And if any say you would, they're not welcome here.
Rachel?
His father stepped in from the entry alcove into the hall.
Let him decide how to solve this.
He strode across the room while his mother shook her head, her lips tight.
He's my last son. I wasn't there to heal Malcolm and Alistair on the battlefield. I'll be damned if I let Shark walk away from me.
Alec walked close, but didn't touch Shark's shoulder like he used to each time he passed. Perhaps his Dar thought he wouldn't notice how he hadn't laid a finger on him since that day. No one had, except his mother.
No harm will come to him with power like that.
He gestured to Shark's hands.
But he needs time to hone it, learn to use it properly. Rachel argued.
The two stood facing one another, discussing him like he was a young lad who'd been begging for his first real sword.
Meg needed time to learn to heal with her magic, and we learned from Dory how to control the weather.
Shark stood with his hands fisted at his sides.
Your magic is blue. Mine is red.
Rachel shook her head.
But it must come from my line, altered by you being a man instead of a woman. You have no dragonfly birthmark like us women, but the magic comes from our family line.
He had a birthmark, a sinewy line that looked like a pointed tail. It wrapped around his left forearm.
Could it be a sign of the devil? His mother didn't mention the mark because she knew he thought it evil. He looked to his da. Better talk to Caden and Meg about their son, Kincaid, especially if he has a mark like mine. Alec nodded once, his face grim.
Another reason you must stay, to help your cousin, Rachel quickly followed. If the red magic comes to the men in the family, you need to help us figure out how to use it properly. Kincaid is a man of 18 now. He will need you.
No one speaks of any magic in the land. Alec's voice was low. Malcolm and Alistair didn't have any.
The look in his dar's eyes was dull, as if he were accepting that Shark was alone, an aberration of the healing blue magic for which Rachel was revered. Shark met his gaze for a long moment, then turned to his mother and shook his head.
I'll leave at dawn.
He pivoted on his heel before her water-filled eyes could pierce his heart further. Rain dripped from the grey clouds, hunkered down over the moor, mirroring Shark's foul mood. White and grey rocks broke through the green landscape like bones pushing through ripped skin. The call of a hawk cleaved through the thick clouds that nearly touched the land and hid the low hills that were so very different from the crags of the highlands. Faithful Kyo loped beside Shark's horse, his grey coat nearly blending in with his namesake, the mist. Tiny pearls of water dotted his coat, and Jarek flicked droplets off his ears. Shark breathed in water with each inhale. Oh, 2 weeks of travelling without a clean palate reminded him that he much preferred a hearth to a campfire. He would stay in the next town he came upon, at least until he could figure out where he was going. Edinburgh was the centre of all the political and religious struggles going on between Marie of the French House of Guise and James Hamilton, the second Earl of Arran. Marie's daughter, the young Queen Mary Stuart, was safely tucked away in France, but her mother strategized here in Scotland to keep her daughter's throne. The mother had just been officially named regent to rule Scotland for her daughter, but many still sided with Lord Arran, including the English. All that danger and intrigue would surely tempt his cursed magic to push its way out into the open. Best to avoid it. Kyo raised his snout, the black tip flexing to inhale the distant tang of damp wood smoke. A village might lay ahead, perhaps with ale, an ample-bosomed widow, and a dry bed. But then Shark's gut tightened. Something tugged at his core where his power stewed, piquing his magic. His dad had always called it Shark's amazing instincts for survival, but now his sire knew it had been his cursed magic that alerted him to danger before others. The wolf kept pace at the horse's flank, his ears flattened. Shark slowed as they entered the shadowed copse of tall oaks. Just like in the highlands, ferns sprouted everywhere, a cover for animals and marauders alike. Late summer had broadened the canopy of fluttering leaves on the trees above, so that the rain only tapped sporadically through to the forest floor. Shark slid a dagger from his boot, and used knees to guide the horse between the thickly wrinkled trunks. He tipped his head back to spy the high limbs, having learned to look above for ambush. In the distance he heard a man's voice and a bark of rough laughter. Someone was brimming with fear. It was the fear that drew him. 4 men stood in a clearing, dressed in rags and rich clothing that didn't seem to fit. Thieves. They stared up at a tree with shields at the ready.
I think she's a wee fairy lass,
one man glanced around his shield to smile wickedly up the tree.
Now there, lassie, where did ye come from?
A second asked.
Come down now,
the third thief shuffled to the base of the tree, keeping his head covered with his shield.
We'll be kind to ye.
He glanced at his friends.
I can see under her skirts.
And he whistled low. The first lowered his shield to spy up the tree. Shark pressed his knees into Jarek's side, and the horse leapt forward.
Start,
he demanded they stop. He glanced overhead and caught the flash of an arrow as it shot downward.
God's balls!
The thief grabbed the shaft of an arrow where it had sliced through his sleeve to pierce his arm, blood darkening the dirty linen. Shark dismounted. 2 more arrows shot from the tree to lance the wooden shields over the men.
What goes on here?
Shark glanced up into the thick foliage above. A flash of torn material and shapely bare legs moved amongst the branches and leaves. Small, dirty toes curled around a limb. He repeated his question in English in case the archer or the men didn't speak Gaelic this far east.
She's ours. We found her first.
A greasy-haired fob with a fancy blue jacket yelled, jabbing his shield upward. Shark whistled and Kyo jumped at one of the men, knocking him down and pinning him beneath his snapping muzzle. He screamed and shut his eyes, surrendering to the beast. Two of the others cursed and moved well away from Kyo. When one notched an arrow to shoot Kyo, Shark whistled two short blasts. The wolf dodged away behind a tree. He growled low, waiting for Shark's signal to spring back into the fray.
Go away.
The woman shook the limbs, hiding her.
I'm no one to trifle with.
The voice held a decidedly English slant.
Finders keepers.
Still holding his shield, the rough man kicked the trunk, possibly in hopes of knocking her out. A bag of coin fell from the branches.
My life is not for sale, but take the silver and leave, thief.
The woman called. Shark waited, but he knew the thieves would pocket the coins and still try to take the lass. Bloody scoundrels didn't bargain when they felt they held the upper hand.
Drop your bow.
The bastard with a bald patch on the top of his head turned his gaze to Shark. He redirected his bow to aim the arrow toward the tree while his friend guarded his head. He smiled, showing brown teeth.
The lass has no shield.
There was little hope that the woman could maneuver quickly enough in the limbs to dodge the arrow if he fired. She must have deduced the same. With a muted curse, the bow fell from the tree to bounce against the packed moss. Shark felt the prickly tension in the clearing. His magic searched for release. If he could just focus it, funnel it out enough to use it without losing control. He'd done it before, once, when trying to stop a wolf from killing Kyo as a pup. It was just enough power to take the large beast's strength without taking his life.
I said drop your sword, Highlander,
the balding man spat on the ground,
or she dies.
He sneered.
I've a clear shot through her breast, so kick over all your weapons, man, and any gold or coins you happen to have on ye, too.
He glanced sideways at the one who'd lowered his shield.
Turn it out to be a lucrative day, I'd say. I believe we've just found a mount as well.
He laughed as Shark dropped his dagger and sword into the leaf litter. He was too far away to reach the bastard before he released the arrow. The balding one picked up the woman's pouch and bow, while another motioned for Shark to kick over his blades.
Go on, mountain man. Throw over your monies, too.
I have none. Shark's power roiled up within him, begging for release. Though you're welcome to search me.
Jeff,
the thief with the crooked nose called, and the leader followed the man's line of sight.
What's wrong with ye, man?
Leave the woman and ye will live, Shark warned, his voice low, letting his power show in a hardening of his eyes. Could the bastard see a faint spark of red there, too? The forest around them waited, the very air holding its breath. The green canopy of the trees seemed to contain his words, causing a slight echo, like they were in a great hall instead of a forest.
Bloody devil!
The balding one, named Jeff, sneered and pulled back tighter on his bowstring. A low curse came from the tree and the leaves shook. Was the lass trying to move out of range? Shark held his hands up as if surrendering and cast his glance downward.
That's it, darling. Climb down here or I'll shoot you through.
Jeff moved backward, his arrow still cocked.
I'd rather die.
Brave lass. He could feel her fear, but she refused to give in to it. The man wiped a dirty sleeve across his wet lips.
I say, get your lovely arse down here, or we will not be so nice with ye.
Shark's blood boiled at the man's threat. He took his own bag of coins out of his cinched pouch on his belt.
Oh, look, I do have gold after all.
Jeff smiled.
I think we will take it all. 'Tis four against one.
Yeah, three. Shark tilted his head to the shop man sitting against a tree. Against a Highlander and his wolf. The odds are hugely in my favor. The leader chuckled darkly. Shark slowly shook his head without breaking the stare with the man's bloodshot eyes.
You've been warned.
His words grated from between his teeth.
Ah!
The lass cried out as her bare foot slipped on the damp branches. She plunged slowly, her arms grasping for branches. She fell in a tangle of wet hair and ripped skirts to the feathery wet ferns below. Jeff leapt forward and hauled her up against him, as the other two bandits charged Shark. With a snapping growl, Kyo jumped in front, knocking down the one he'd pinned earlier. Shark easily slammed the other one down hard enough that the man lay still, face in the dirt and groaning. Shark pivoted toward the woman. The man with the arrow through his arm joined the leader. The bastard pinned her to a large trunk with his good hand against the base of her throat. Her tangled dark hair swayed as he shook her. She kicked at his shins, but he just laughed.
"You'll pee for this all night long."
He pressed his nose against her turned cheek. He tried to kiss her, and she spat in his face.
"You bitch."
He tightened his hold on her throat. She gasped and scratched at his fingers. Shark was on them in two strides, his power surging upward. Jeff cut him off by stepping between them, a blade in his hand. Shark let his magic flow out from its prison in his gut into his palm, and out into Jeff. He could feel it sink into and pull out the man's essence, his strength, his stamina, sucking it back, along the same line into Shark. The thief dropped to his knees, and Shark lunged past him to grab the other bastard. The world flooded with red through Shark's gaze. He jerked the thief away from the woman. She fell to the ground, gasping. Under Shark's hold, the man's face sunk in around his nose and cheeks as he swore, his words warbling in his collapsing throat. One heartbeat, two, three. The thief's chest caved under his shirt, making him round forward until he crumpled into a heap of clothing, dry bones, and ash. Jeff skittered backward from the pile, his heels churning up wet leaves. He grabbed his chest where surely his heart pounded with early decay.
"Leave here," Shark growled.
Kyo snapped viciously.
"Bloody demon!"
Jeff croaked and stood. He passed the sign of the cross furiously before him as if brandishing a sword. The thief that Shark had knocked in the dirt rose too, eyeing the pile of clothing. The three men ran off into the forest, the newly aged leader stumbling to keep up. Shark breathed deeply, erecting the walls once more, waiting for the deep thudding of his heart to slow. The telltale sensation of new power ached in his muscles. As if watching through a sheet of water, he saw the woman wrap slender arms around herself. She breathed heavy and stared at him with beautiful wide eyes. They stood out in her fair face, shaped like almonds, fringed by dark brows and lashes. He blinked, his breathing ragged. Her delicate features came into focus, straight nose, pink lips and cheeks. Her hair lay wet in angled slopes of ribbon over her breasts. One side seemed shorter than the other. She held his gaze as the rain dropped through the forest canopy, the only sound over his fast breathing. Dim light through the leaves cast the forest in varying shades of green. The silence accentuated their stillness where they stood across from one another, the pile that was the thief off to the side. Large, lovely eyes stared at him. She didn't move, but her whole body seemed poised for action. His attuned senses could almost hear the rapid flight of her heart, like that of a bird, bewildered and afraid. With a silent spin, she ran. Chapter 2, 15 March 1554. Duchess of Suffolk, Catherine Willoughby.
"Have you heard the terrible news of my daughter's execution? Jane was queen for 9 days before Mary Tudor's supporters forced Jane and her husband, Lord Guildford Dudley, down from the throne. They made Mary Tudor queen, despite the edict signed by Edward before his death, giving my Jane the throne. King Edward would not have passed England into the hands of a Catholic, and Jane had become a very pious Protestant, just like her cousin, King Edward. My husband, Lord Suffolk, was executed shortly after, and now I and my two remaining daughters are at Queen Mary's mercy. She has ordered us to court to hear my pleas, and will either send us to beg in the streets, or keep us to wait upon her in perpetual service. I can only pray for the latter, and hope that fortune will be more kind to my remaining family. I pray, too, that you remain apart from this vicious turmoil, but be warned, I fear Queen Mary will be suspicious of any Suffolk, especially one known to practice Protestantism. I must go to London, but if you are still free, leave for the continent before Grimsthorpe is taken by force. Forever your friend and beloved stepdaughter, Frances Brandon Grey."
Elena's heart slammed behind her breasts, her gasps feeding her quivering muscles to move her legs.
"Lord, protect me."
She leapt over a fallen log and sprinted. Her torn chemise flapped open, allowing her legs to stretch, propelling her from the lethal mountainous warrior behind her.
What had he done to that man? How had he killed him so completely?
Elena heard a deep voice calling behind her. Was he chasing her? Acorns bruised the arches of her bare feet as she ran, the low bushes scratching her shins and ankles, tearing even more of her ragged shift. Like a frightened doe, she bounded through the ferns, her toes squishing into what must be those large black slugs she'd seen everywhere in the forest. Ugh. She stopped and wiped her foot.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?